Because it does not appreciate the Related to mining, minerals, and processing, which lives with us. tragedy that they expected from a company, or whether it doesn't matter and they should be able to continue to reward them in that position. And to this side, the case itself came about as the Department of Trade and Industry, the question of competition authority, which is the issue in around 2007. At that time, I wasn't the competition commission. So the question, I suppose, is, has competition come to this? Well, this is what the competition authority has been working away at over many years. Has industrial policy come to terms with it? I don't mean in terms of the objectives, I mean in terms of the tools and the mechanisms. It's interesting to note that the tribunal, competition tribunal position, in this case, makes reference to the State of the Nation address, 2005 and 2006. So this is just 8 years later, which explicitly refers to the State of the Nation addresses. This is here, the question, and this is the one case of whether Dr. Pembroke Institute should be aware of it, even the problem or not. And the tribunal was supposed to do this because they were clearly being aware that this was a key concern. So competition law is also just one mechanism that's addressing the conduct of firms. Because we have also the division of common reasons in the competition. And this then leads to asking questions about beneficiation. And sometimes the debate about whether beneficiation should be based on, if you like, subsidies or local industry, a price of local industry, which is below what the company can get for exporting the minerals. And there was, for example, the EMG in this day from the week ago, you know, saying you should be careful about, by the kind of housing we were talking about, how to be repaired in 2017. They should be careful about subsidies, I think, local industry, to reduce and protecting the prices. But I want to make clear, here we're not talking about that, here we're talking about removing discrimination against local industry. So we're talking about a situation where you are exporting the product. Large amounts of basic effects which have been announced in the country of the mineral, based mineral. And we're not talking about, in this case, about putting the price below against for export. We're talking about removing discrimination against local buyers, bring local buyers in line with what an export customer is getting. Number two, as an X factory or an X mine maker, you're looking at the product leaving the factory and you're saying, is the price that's being charged the local customer higher than the price that's being charged the export customer? On level, it's an issue that's simple as that. So don't dispute about the kind of basic fact this matter, which is that the local customers are getting charged for tariffs because of the cost of importing and the transport for the export market. This is a very big difference. It's a very substantial difference. The local customers are there getting charged much higher than being paid by sale made to export customers. So this is a separate question. Then should we put prices even below export prices? Should we have local fuel manufacturers in the islands that are cheaper than the export? So this issue of steel and chemicals is not that issue. The issue about whether you should very easy to bring the prices to the local buyers down to the price of the export customer. Thirdly, I think is that there are many different ways in which state and public institutions interface with a large firm. I mean, this is by the if you're a very large business, then obviously you need government to govern and public institutions to provide electricity, railway lines, roads, infrastructure. So then this will always be to be about some kind of a partnership to create a deeper relationship. So every question about negotiating that relationship, competition or fitness and independence of the institution in one particular place. But there's obviously many other ways in which public institutions interface with these large firms. In terms of, well, why do we care? And I think, you know, this is I'm a very present picture. There's still some kind of debate whether manufacturing is important for inclusive growth. I think the world is under-recognized that manufacturing is central. And so you want to have diversified industrial capabilities. Because those diversified industrial capabilities create a whole lot of multiplier effects. In the service industry, there's not a manufacturing where the services have a place. The manufacturing is very important as a central set of activities which generate demand for transport services, for logistics, telephones, etc. So talking about the downstream manufacturing of the But if you take out the non-dual victims, you need to treat it 1.6%. 1994 to 2015. So a lot of these that I'm expecting to see almost before, it's below the GDP, and it's the reverse of what you see of upper-middle-income countries. So we're not talking about the Vietnam or lower-income countries that have got, you know, very low income. We're talking about the upper-middle-income countries and comparing ourselves to those. And obviously there are two burdens of other issues, such as steel and polymer chemicals that go into industries and burdens. It's not clear, of course, there are other challenges, access to finance, skills, technology, etc. And the question is whether it's not really using the advantages that we have as countries in terms of our environment. So let me come to the plastic and polymers as a kind of a case study. So polymer chemicals, in the case specifically of polypropylene. When you put a polymer chemical, use your bottle up here is polypropylene, that's the chain of polypropylene by the furniture, covers, or cars, or vehicles, and so on. The lunch boxes, added buckets of these companies, but your regulations are in the supermarket, those are polypropylene. So you have a company which they take the material from themselves, you melt it, and then you go into the mold, and you shape it into the product. It's not ultra labor intensive, but it's labor aerobic. You make all of these things, you're going to have some operating machines, all the things that happen in those factories. You've got a labor-absorbing industry, typically plastic. The plastic conversion industry, they're getting the polymer chemical, they convert it into a finished plastic product. Or at least the new product that is going to be, for example. It grows faster than overall growth rate. Because plastic is a thing of material. It can be lightweight, it's got lots of different properties that you can use. And so there are energy. Which is then designed and improved. So we should be growing that industry more rapidly than overall. And if you look at what happened, but it has underperformed our peers and underperformed other manufacturing industries overall. If you look at that snapshot of the data, we use it in South Africa. It's the largest input cost for plastic converter, the firm making. Input cost is much more important than labor cost per se. So it tends to be put 60% of the production cost of those industries. So you've got an industry which is a firm which is taking material which amounts to about 40-60% of its production cost. So other costs happen about this. But you're making how much, think about plastic share. How high is the plastic share to compete with imported share? How high is the plastic to compete with an imported product? And you look at your cost of production per unit, and this is by far the biggest question. It has a knock-on effect, because if you don't make margins on that business, you can't then buy your equipment to reinvest and upgrade. So there's a vicious sort of vicious circle here. If you're making margins, you're putting then you can invest. If you're squeezing the boat, then you're behind the rate, of course, the rate of invest. So your overall quality. So you're willing to invest in skills, training, and development to be back. So you can learn in a vision of 35 with regards to things like the technology, the qualities, and the skills that you have. The case is about that question of the most properly input. That's all affected in a company position. It's affected mainly immediate input, and this is properly, purified properly, and it goes to polypropylene, and there's some chemistry that goes into. It essentially becomes little better than the amount of that. It's a byproduct of the liquid fuel business. It's not separate from the overall issue. It's not a common byproduct. So there's a separate entity of that little type of chemical industry. The pipe, the feedstock, is clearly within that group and makes this product. And they, large scale operations, there are tons of work out of producers and new engines coming into this tomorrow, and they try to import that today. So you've got firms in Israel, say in Johannesburg, the Grenadier, or Johannesburg, itself, who are buying from Kunda, and then they're getting a price, and the price that they can charge is a different importing it from East Asia. Basically, you've got a build-up that says, where else can you go to if you don't buy from us? Well, you can only go to the imports. And you then have to get the cost, etc., of doing that. Small focus is that they're not the use of polypropylene, but they rely on that for their input. So in terms of the case, of course, we can sell chemicals. But they rely on that so they can get into faith out of that satisfaction. In the second half of the 1990s, government actually commissioned a study for the curriculum each task force had to look at the support that was provided to standard individuals through the fuel regime. The study touched on looking at the knock-on impact on other industries using other products in our program. And they found that, in actual fact, the support that was being provided to SATOS was being benefited by the industries, because at that time, some industries, for polypropylene, were getting paid for prices. And they compared the equal prices, and they compared the local prices to local, so this is the study in 1995, and they said, okay, the state is approving regulatory support but these other industries are getting export price products, and this is a big benefit to them. This is a good price that allows them to be competitive. Some of the benefits are being passed on. So why did we have a case in the 2000s? Well, at some point, this price will have to change. So around, certainly from the early 2000s, the price moved from export price to import price price. So there was an import price price to take it off the something to bear in mind with big exports of polypropylene. So it's very easy to sell to the local industry. Tribunal decision, which says that I'm talking about these holes in public ways, I've been arguing about great detail in front of the tribunal, including my own testimony there. Tribunal decision says that it was, in this case, a size of market power. It's not the case that this whole private strategy is always necessarily going to be an issue. It's really very hard to manage exports. You've got a lot of equity. So why are you having a full price? You wouldn't go, for example, of the clothing industry charging a full parish price. I mean, the clothing industry is trying to sell out here to you. Not as if we are daily and exports of clothing. We're talking about inside pricing, where something that's an artificial price. Because you're exporting large volumes of production. So, import price price is a risk. We are uncompetitive. When an actual price is very naturally competitive in terms of the large net export. They said that the tribunal said the price should be a critical world cost, and the double price of chemical industry, I should say, and that it led to lots of opportunities for hollow innovation development and gathering development of the plastic industry that are converted to products. And the remedy is what they said, some chemical industries can't discriminate by the nation. The remedy is non-discrimination. So you can't identify where the person buying the product is located. You can't say, are you located in Croatia? Are you located in Ireland? Effectively, that's what the right thing is to do. If you're located in Coralini or in Cape Town, you don't have an alternative to consolidation for parity rights. And the government imposed penalties as well. So this is just, I don't know if you can see, I've got the printout on the side, and I'm going to get the printout. But just to show you little data, plastic sector, plastic purpose converted polychemicals into plastic products. And it's based on the South Africa, Asia, Africa, which comes from Quantic, from the Quantic. And it shows, the yellow line shows the plastic production, how it's changed over time. As an index, it shows how it's changed the level over time, up to 100 in 1994. And if you see that around the time of the second half of 1990, the trade liberalization also happened in the period. But you'll see in Europe in 1994, there was a close trade liberalization in 1997. Some may remember it was a tough year, a couple of years, and you see strong growth in 2002, very strong growth. In fact, the average in 1994-2002 is 6% annual growth. So this industry can grow at close to double GDP. It actually did it, according to the data in terms of the late 1990s. Recall that we understand from our Anderson report, what follows is that the room to import private prices happened sometime between 1990, second half of 1990 and 2000, and then you see that from 2002 to 2013, production has fallen as the ups and downs. If you look at the net effect over that period, which is contracted from 1% per year on average. And there's low demand, there was a fall in employment, say, the 2000 jobs we lost instead of jobs being paid. Now you may say, well, what about all those things that were going on? What about other issues, that's just the key cost issues to do with infrastructure, skills, etc. Well, that's why the blue line is there, non-commodity manufacturing. Non-commodity manufacturing means sort of light manufacturing, not gear, etc. As you can see, the comparison between that report, which has not been very good, whether we have to then put another kind of stone in the pocket of these birds that weighs them and stand down, that is having an effect on the global ability to create wealth and make investment. And you can see where tofu import ratio has risen from around about 15%. So we actually, the industry held the line against imports pretty well in terms of the amount of imports through to 2004, in fact. And you can see imports have been coming in larger and larger portion of about 30% by 2015. So if you go into a shop or a supermarket shelf, and you look at the lunch boxes and you look at the homeware goods, you look at the plastic furniture, you see a very large portion. Some estimates of 50% of those products are imported. That's really what's on the table actually made locally. In fact, we return on the idea of protection and to be more competitive, we will be able to expand their production. There's also another aspect that deals with some questions that might come up. Some of these are issues that are only raised in the media, some of the issues that are raised in terms of the arguments that are made in the case, etc. I've also the first one already about whether we should be subsidizing local industries, if you like, by actually the low export prices. But in this case, it's about moving prices towards export prices. This is about moving information against local buyers. There's another way for which people go further than that. The second point is that sometimes people say, well, all the firms get anything from selling local markets, but they're going to sell exports at lower returns. So the actual exports can be sold once you serve up to serve the local market. This is not necessarily the case. If you look at coal, iron ore, you name the prices that have the lowest export prices where we've got larger exports. Our imagination is the issues that are detailed issues of coal prices, but if you look at the number of times the local market is getting prices that are in line sometimes low expenses compared to export prices. There's huge tax revenues that are coming from upstream industries, so that the negotiations will undermine those tax revenues. But I mean, the tax revenues are there because of the huge profits that have been made. I mean, we want profits to be made by industries that are also creating jobs. We want tax revenues to come from a wider tax. The people are working, they're not working, so they're not working. And then from a wider tax base, we've got tax revenues coming from a more diversified economy. There's an argument that while you're reducing profits upstream, people will not invest upstream. They will undermine the investment. There's something we talk about it for a very long time. But the key point is that we have, what about incentives for investments in the downstream labor growing industries? This is transfer from upstream to the downstream industry. And are we really wanting to change the structure of the economy? Then we want more investments in the downstream industry. We want to diversify the economy. Not an industry which remains concentrated on a few firms and say, thank you very much for paying for taxes. This is, I would argue, not a sustainable position. And then the last point, the point that I touched on the beginning, is that, well, you know, the basis of support was given in the past, it's all being paid back now. Why are we worrying about that? Why are we going after this? But the state support creates this position, this negative position. So once you create that powerful position, you're there, you're in place. And so it's a different question that we're at here, which is what to do about legacy, what to do about paths that we are on already because of that history back up to the presentation. And that's the question I think which we're debating, the key issue we're debating today, is how to make that differentiation so that we can see where we're coming from. I think it's important to really engage with this question. Thank you very much for
yes, thank you very much, thank you very much indeed. This is also very specific, key issues presented here, so thankfully. Why don't we start, because the church presenters, many of them, are approaching. Thank you very much, and we will be coming back to that during the discussion. We now move on to back to yourself, then, Dr. Paul Jordan, the Minerals Bank Association, looking at up and downstream in this regard. And by now, we all have a correct document to touch on. And I'm just looking around. I see a few more people here who joined us, and then they just turned again, or they want to talk somewhere. Yeah, is that yourself, Honorable Toby? Charles, yes,
Then we have the National Development Grant Plan, which recognizes very clearly that our minimal incomes could be used as a springboard for a new way of industrialization. So that way, what do you need a ripple if all of these products into manufacturing have a use of monopoly price? What's important in the NDP, but also is an important part of beneficiation, is the upstream, the inputs into mining, the capital goods, the consumables, and the services. And they are on the labouring source, demanding services, and they have opportunities to develop these industries. And then it also recognises that the big differentiator between countries that manage to grow in our position and those that get stuck in the middle income kind of corridor is the investment in human capital, investment in skills. Skills are critical to beneficiation, both the downstream beneficiation, value addition, and the upstream beneficiation of the inputs. The key themes, coming out of our national policies, that the minerals in the ground are lost to the people as a whole, that the state needs to capture the mineral rent, that mining must catalyze broad industrialization to the back of the indigenous into the input and forward the indigenous into value addition. That destructive monopoly pricing for mineral feedstocks must be stopped, and minerals must be available for the transformation at the specific prices all along the value chain, not just from the mine to the steel plant, but from the steel plant to the semi, from the semi to components, components to the substances, and finally into finished product. And finally, that investment in STEM technical skills, that science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and R&D, which is research, development, and innovation, is critical for realizing the massive opportunities that are there. Well, what is beneficiation? The narrow definition is that it's just the value that's just down to you. Value is beyond the wall, beyond the concentrate, beyond the metal, beyond the sense. The broad definition is that it's the total value addition in South Africa, excluding obviously all of the imports. So if we look at the value chain from mining, concentration, smelting, refining, into selling, into manufacturing, at each point, the South African value addition is made of the local value addition without the imports, or the total value addition with the imports. So at each point, if we're importing a lot of input, the overall South African value addition is low. So we might be adding 50% to the value of aluminum, but if we're importing more input, right, the net value addition in South Africa is small. Therefore, we've got to look at the total value addition, which includes local content. So ideally, we'd like very high local content and very high value addition going down the pipeline or the value chain. So beneficiation is the sum of local value addition in the final imported product. That means it's both backward and forward. We can't exclude the backward value. So in general, in South Africa, there have been two approaches to downstream beneficiation. One I call the flyby. It says, because we have a mineral, therefore we should beneficiate. The other one is the one that says, what do we want? We want jobs. And then we look at what are the critical minimal feedstocks in job creation. And job creation, as we heard earlier, is around manufacturing. Other areas that are important for job creation are agriculture, so minerals in agriculture, are also infrastructure, minerals in infrastructure, and energy. So, if you look at those manufacturing or key minerals are steel, polymers, and magnets. But just to give you an idea of scale, the world uses second is positive. The positive are 300 million cuts, double that of 400 million combined. So you have two critical inputs into creating jobs and manufacturing are steel and cotton, and both of them are not in our country. So we dead or we can't even swim. So if you're going to share of the paper, steel and cotton, right? So you've got everything around you, steel and cotton. Your motor cars are going to cost different steels and cotton. We've got to get these prices right, or we are just wishing that we're going to have growth, and we're going to come up with more and more decorations and manifest that in the country. Energy, again, is a critical mineral for your fossil fuels, including gas, and some other minerals that are needed to provide limestone emissions. In infrastructure, it's a key. In China, half of the steel is going into construction. Terry Building has rebar, it has beams, it has many on-product systems. For all infrastructure, costs are pushed up on the market of steel frame. Then, of course, there's copper or wiring and cement. Again, from the coal injection. Agriculture, NPK, nitrogen, phosphate, potassium. For grains and oil seeds, it's a similar thing to climate. That 70-70% of the farmers' costs are in the fertilizer. It's a major cost. And again, we've had the cost of monopoly pricing, and I'm pleased to say, in the area of phosphate and nitrogen, we are making that under control. I don't think time will be used for that. We are making headway on that one. The other area, which is the exception, is that in some world, we have producer power. Producer power means you have a lot more power to encourage the location of the downstream industry in South Africa. And we looked at all of the minerals where we have greater than 70% of local resources, like chromium, titanium, etc. But the only one that really, where they did produce the power was platinum group metal, where we believe that we need to control our platinum mining so that we can optimize that producer power to get the downstream company to locate in South Africa. This looks at all of the linkages from mining, and they're all linked to the beneficiation because they're all inputs into the mining of beneficiated products. So the four linkages, the physical linkages that feed back into the loan, the steel, we need the tax back in order to get the steady barrier, feed into the battery linkages, again, they need the graduate into the engineering intensive industry, the capital equipment, etc. The spatial linkages, which are the infrastructure, the water mentioned, all of these are accepted and need to get all the components right. However, my opinion is the most important of these linkages is the knowledge linkages. If we look at other countries that have moved from being resource-based or banana republic to industrial, one thing they have in common is that all come to the same field. So they're good, and I know knowing that there's no country that doesn't invest heavily in STEM skills, maybe, but it seems like it's not necessary, it's an absolute prerequisite. We need to do the two, but to do the STEM skills, we need to get a handle on physical linkages. Are we getting the resources? So, this is a quick little slide showing a tale of two states. The one on the graph on the left shows TCL and then it shows Finland. So you can see on the manufacturing curve, it's there, that Finland in 1960, 1970 was on the manufacturing curve. It then opened up the tunnel, you have the Chicago boy coming with a tube, and it's moved down to the EC primary economy, resource, the banana curve. And then you look at Finland and the opposite. 1960 is top of the banana curve, it's exporting wood, it's exporting minerals. And then it moves behind the edge to the manufacturing curve. And what was the difference between these two is that Finland made those linkages. They went upstream into wood, machinery, paper, pulp, capital goods, and they went downstream into processed wood, into papers, etc.,
Between the state and mind. And how does this relate to beneficiary
sun tattoos, the beer, the cigarettes, etc., from the downstream industry. And we can easily get those to, we can design an offset system where they put the impact in neutral. So the resource for a tax loss is compensated for by all of the demonstration industries that are facilitated. But what do we gain? So it's neutral on tax, but we gain hundreds of thousands of jobs. And that's the most important challenge to our country. So, what are the constraints? The biggest constraint we have is the lack of a coherent, aligned state strategy around us. Our boys are quite rude, they all of our ministries, they operate like ranks and armies. I'll do it my way, and everyone calls in look at my way, so we get nowhere. So the first thing is we need a coherent state and affiliated strategy across all the ministries, across GDI, DMR, EU, Treasury, DSC, and others. DTE is another important one that I've mentioned. Each department has to have its own agenda, tell its own thing, they all crash the market. They all do it my way. But we don't need a lot of my ways. There must be only one way. The lovely way, the Africa way. We need to overcome our massive unemployment. The second is that a lot of our monopoly pricing just kills all of the downstream beneficiation with a monopoly stock by venal companies such as Shuttle, ISCO, and others. All come from the history of apartheid, all net state mining companies, all privatized before the monopolies. This destroys downstream. We see the disrespect of our technology. Through allowing companies to leave, we've seen our RDI capacity in mining technology disappear. Particularly the D-miners of the Chamber of Mines Research Organization, once the largest in the world, who was a leader, now we are none. Now our companies all do their R&D offshore. So we want to write that. 40% skills. We have problematic schooling, but the ministry, the presidency has seen that. We're not getting our high grading up in science graduates through. We need to overcome that. We need not only the schooling, but we need to graduate the technicians in the hospital. We have no local market, valuation, or re-sparking requirements in our mining licenses. So they have to go and do the RDI, big RDI settings in Europe, in other countries. We have nothing in our mind that I consider that you must spend with it. Local content. We have no local content in our thing. Don't be bought from Apple, Costco, Savic, Support, Bell, Art, Rare, Deadly, all of our local capital groups. We're losing our big time. So we, as we make my mining, we are people. And our company, even worse, are developing new products with these foreign companies in Europe. Right now we've got this re-boring developed by Anglo with German tests in Germany. We have the same as Latin America developing with Sunday. What does that mean? It increases the competitiveness of Europe and undeveloped stuff. We have lack of mineral value addition in centers, but the second center for offsets, like the one I recommended, if we reduce the use of resources for a tax and then allow them to offset it again, creating jobs and wealth in our country. It would be a very powerful lever, I believe. Then we have a constrained national budget. At the moment, we're up to the right to speak with our talent in terms of our debt certainty. The non-debt, I think it's close to 50% of GDP, but that's not important, it's the debt certainty. We're in a massive fiscal constraint. If we don't watch out, we'll slip into a SAP under IMF, a structural adjustment program. And that's the one that I should have forced us to open up everything and we'll go even further.
I need to remind you, Dr. Shorten, that time is not very important.
I reached the mark here. There's time coordination, we need to end it. NDRDA to allow the backwards and forwards conditionalities and RDI. We need to end it to a case for 60 mentioned for the critical feedstock. We need a harmonized strategy. As I say, all of these strategies we need to produce themselves. We need to base our eating purchases under the money charter on the low, on the BDE value added to stop the fronting, where BDE is, where BDE will come in at 95% import and the 5% commission to the front company and unemployed companies in South Africa. So it would be the BDE on the low market. So in that case, it would be that you'd only look at it on the 5%, not the 95%. The negotiation, as you said, will be looked at by various industries and invest in the upstream technology. We need to rebuild tomorrow and get our state skills sorted out. But the issues are going to slow. Downstream, strategic food stocks with pricing provisions. We need to align the co-beneficiation milestones in our mining licenses of 5, 10, 15, 20 years. The NGP, the new growth policy proposal 50% in 20 years. Develop the offset fees, export tariffs. Establish new fuel producers to make competition and to discipline the current abusers using import tariff neutrality. Ban scrap, metal export, use our producer power. That appreciate and invest again, support specification technology and skills, and let's beneficiate in many cases the first step in high intensive. Let's look at regional solutions for us, particularly because the region has more potential than we do in terms of hydro and in terms of gas. And then the knowledge changes are critical. We build our technology, minimum RDI spend of 3% of value added, increased funding for RDI from IRC, increased funding for HRC from us, because the system can't do it at the moment, but from the resource transact, school math, state graduates, technicians, officers. Major engineering and science can be free, like in South Korea, to encourage you to send a message to the kids, do you have your advanced science, you get a free degree, do you want to do philosophy, you better. Discovering the essence of skill, of technical skills, that the full cost of an engineer, which is most probably half a million rand, is a notional loan. I don't mean the fees, I mean the full cost of the state, the university is going to 2% subsidy. The full cost is the loan. If you stay away from South Africa, you never pay it, but if you need the trigger list. So you go to Australia, you can pay back South Africa for that half a million they sent you. Regional integration is critical. Our market is too small. We need to regionally integrate for mining people, underground mining. Our market in the region is as big as the whole of Europe. But for most of us, our market is a fraction of Europe. So in this need, we actually have a very big market. The total inputs in mining in Southern Africa are bigger than the total inputs in mining in Europe. That's how they come. Yes, we are run by European companies. But yeah, we have an opportunity, but we've got to do it together. We can't say, oh, they're on a very fair. We have to have a joint strategy. We could look at the EU. The EU in 1921 started with the Treaty of Paris, which was only for EFTA, which was coal and steel. Coal means, at that point, petrochemical and steel. Maybe we instead of going for a big, static, free trade integration, do like the Europeans, and just start on a basic feedstock. We need to invest in infrastructure too, so the region becomes real. You know, if you look at GDP in the region, that's now $1 trillion, a lot of that's Angola, but we're not connected to Angola. The infrastructure doesn't exist. There's no rail connection and the road connection hardly exists. So we need to invest in infrastructure. The NDP recommends it. We need to invest in regional infrastructure to realize that market, for them to realize us, and us to realize them. We need to develop regional mineral input strategies, which are being done. We need to develop regional hydro strategies. They have enormous hydro potential, estimated at 200 gigawatts. That's 5 times our total consumption. Regional gas utilization strategy. Gas is energy, gas you can go into colonies, gas into many, gas is a fantastic stock, neither. Develop the regional mining input strategy, I'll repeat it, sorry. The regional mining our entitlement to the market is larger than the whole of the EU. And this just gives some data. For manufacturers, Africa has become our major export area. And this just gives you our mineral input, despite no support, despite no RBI anymore, has increased 400% over the last 10 years, mainly because of these. And this was just a very, very, very complicated slide from the Simpson report saying there could be between 400 and 1 million jobs if we had a series of inventions, which I won't go through in detail, but I'll refer you to the AMC website where you can get the full 400 pages. And these are just repeating. Eliminate the pricing, resource rent tax, amend the MGRDA, invest in 10 skilling, maximize the development impact of mineral resources through getting prices going through public tender. And that's the lot of it. So finally, we have the vision, we have the tools, and the resources to make it happen. The tender. Thank you, Yolanda.
Now, it's good to know you've got a full team behind you. Thank you very much, Dr. Paul Jordan. That actually has really expanded our insights in this area and your presentation here. We hope all of you are going to remain until we have the discussion. We're moving very swiftly now onto the Industrial Development Corporation. Understand it will be immediately followed by a competition commission. I'm looking at some of you working in this area, okay? And with the Industrial Development Corporation here, we actually have just getting people to my name. Things have changed here. Looking at the lingo, let's see. No, you see, I'm just looking at a change now. Mr. Tuniswa, is that right? The head of metal in the Industrial Development Corporation. Immediately over to yourself, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Can everybody hear me? Okay. Good morning, sir, and good morning to all of you. What my presentation is going to be a little different from the previous speakers, but we will be doing in trying to share some of the lessons learned from the ICC into how we have gone about differentiation. And then we will talk about our thinking going forward, and also we will demonstrate some case studies. I think we have not gone as far as 1940 when we started this presentation from the mid-90s, where our key strategy was to identify and exploit the mineral resources. I will show you some examples. In the mid-90s, we went on to look at other downstream beneficiation linkages. And we also accorded between addressing ownership structures, so we also went on to do what normally called the transition in the mining sector and the beneficiation. Currently, where we are, we still continue with the mineral beneficiation. However, our focus now in terms of strategic and key mineral. So the money is going on. When we don't invest in every mineral we see, but we only focus on the key one because the resource is limited. If you look at this slide, it shows the map picture at the Fagana. Our involvement between 94 and 96, we expanded the hillside aluminum soil. But what is key at the lesson that is this is a high or energy intensive industry. And for this company to be able to set up the professional business. And currently I expect the professional business to probably end with the vapor industry, Christy or 2020.
So
by the new if you are not committed. So we are doing all the things about the cost of sin in us being committed. And also we have tried to do some other things where we have mini mills and micro mills where we take the scrap metal and convert scrap metal back into metal that's convenient for the producer. The challenge is within the scrap metal sector is that most of the scrap is being exported. So it is more likely to export the scrap that is not people that is still in domestic. This is a little situation around this way the cost of care is to be below the London side pricing. But we still have challenges. There is a way in which the export of care can pass. We take the steps to the coastal area and then the city of the care of the area. But it's very difficult to take the care of care to the unit where the biggest cruise is not. So, we are trying to say that we are looking at the
situation.
Oh, okay. It's actually facing in the wrong direction. So we are trying to resolve the scrap metal issue and we hope that in the near future we can resolve it so that if scrap metal is available, it should help us locally, then it could be beneficial locally and benefit the local energy. But our beneficiation doesn't stop only at producing the metal. We then have to come to tertiary and secondary beneficiation. So our strategy is for the tertiary beneficiation. We have also looked at the exporting countries, the developed countries and the emerging economies. Why is it that they do well? And in the next few slides, we'll show you what is it that they are exporting versus what we are exporting. But we also want to piggyback on what exists in South Africa. Currently, we have a sizable automotive sector, although 1% of the global economy, which is well monitored by GTI APTC program. So we are looking, and what we have realized, currently, we are exporting other people's products. Therefore, we don't have a say as to where these products go and what inputs should be sought from South Africa. In the automotive sector, we have BMW, they decide where to source what input and what to export. And we believe that we need a start to develop a South African automotive company that will support the local innovation and also utilize most of the local resources. So we are working with certain stakeholders, looking at how we can develop an automotive OEM. And we have realized in a country like Korea, we don't have the same population as all, but they have large exports in automotive. So not all the cars that they need to consume locally, but because it drives their own innovation, they are able to export. But if we don't drive our own innovation, then it becomes a future exercise because we rely on what our companies can hand out from multinational companies. On the fabrication side, we have strategies to localize renewable energy components, energy, conventional energy components for Eskom. And we are also looking better to shape those components. But the challenge that we have seen, we don't take advantage of our own programs as government. Government has spent a lot of money in renewable energy, but the local content requirements are very low. As a result, the companies that have a fixed in China for solar panels, they don't see a point to localize in South Africa because they can meet the local content requirement just through consulting fees, construction costs, and that. So the program pays us if we lower our local content. Local content requirements where we have our South African Renewable Program is the biggest in the world at this stage. Then we should utilize that program to our advantage. czyli wśród local content provider, czyli inicjatywy w tym momencie. Werner support for local innovation and local product development. Currently also we have a rolling stock program between Alpha and Transnet. You know, we also have a shipbuilding program that tries to identify opportunities for localization. As I've already, most of this slide just shares with you what I have already said around localization, so I'll skip this slide. So now, what are the key considerations if we want to solve some of the problems we have? We have looked at other countries. The top one are spending a lot of money on research and innovation. The global average spends the GDP about 2%. Just about 2%. South Africa is looking at about 0.6, 0.7. So we are far below global average in research spending. And if we don't develop our own products to export, we then rely on exporting other people's products. Then you are in a different position because now your negotiation power is less. But if you have a cheap product and you spend a lot of money, the chances are you will be able to export from your resources. And also, it's key that we decide where we fit in the value chain. Yes, we can mine all the resources we have, but we don't have infinite resources in terms of income sales stream, but also we might not be competitive in other sources. So let me see that which resources we will focus on. And we compare with the fact that if platinum will constitute 90% of the global resources that are available in South Africa, then we should focus on platinum. Both our research stands and our effort must be focusing on how do we become the most competitive country in any platinum product in the world, so that we can then be able to serve. So our universities, our researchers must be focusing on this, because we already have a natural comparative advantage. So we are not using our comparative advantage, our strength, in order for us to compete globally. So it's very important that also with the iron ore and steel, we have good resources here, which we should be focusing on. And maybe the rest of the other resources we can leave for people to export as they wish, but there, these two critical ones we need to say here. Around these resources must have here. But those are choices I think that we need to make and further diversification of resources. So strengthen the research institution in the more material and improve educational outcomes from basic education upward. Probably a disconnect between what the ministry, we don't have a goal that the education must foster economic development, and therefore it must have a linkage between what we educate people for and what we want to be good at and what we want to produce. Instead of just educating for the sake of whoever wants to get educated and the price is the same. So we have already indicated that we need to research this, we need to acquire know-how, and we need to develop our own technologies to be global competitive. Just to give you a snapshot, this are comparison between different countries and one day as well. You know, on the right hand corner, we have China, we have soon global. And we have South Africa, so you don't export anything. Then you get rid of the HMA. In the middle, we have South Korea losing one ship, building, followed by China and Japan. But the trend is the efforts are mainly on value added program. It's not on primary program. Where you go to the neckline to the plastic, only have more when you see production in the but still very low compared to the country. So if you trace this data, and also this one where we look at 10 top exports for each of the countries, it is clear that all the countries are successful because they export their program, not China program. But we need to choose our niche. You know, we have to do that everything, so it will be very important that we need to try. Among the two that which ones we would have and put most of our resources. Currently we think that Africa is a billion, close to a billion people. South Southern Africa is going very fast. There will be a need for more automotive or whatever. And if we can be a chief producer and target Africa and markets in the automotive sector addition, including the economy, I think we will solve some of our problems there. And I will stop the other slide and thank you. But now I'd like to finish showing some more data.
Of market power, which is
the price sometimes may change by shortening the local market and exporting or reducing supply creates an artificial situation where the import price sets the local price. So it's not in this sense a natural phenomenon. You just short the local market and you are able to achieve that price. Customers are charged as though they are importing the product, sometimes it includes the national transport cost. What is very clear though is that it often doesn't reflect the local cost resulting from local competition. And the rest of it obviously has a very direct link to the negotiation and the local producer against competitor. I mean, if I think often bending the evidence that was led in the plastic case, where clearly you can see that local producers cannot be competitive globally. So, current export situations where you are discriminating against your local producer. So, the story of China being successful in manufacturing is not only a labor cost issue, which is often the popular explanation, but input costs such as polymer that we have been abandoned in the country. We do supply in countries like China at very low cost compared to our own producer. And you get cases for this. Polymer as well as steel cases for excessive prices. And the evidence that I don't have had cases to all of that are the clearly positive discrimination of local producers. This is important for our country and our competition policy does take that into account. South Africa has a very huge economy result of the historic aid support to certain strategic capital intensive industries. We all know that it was the state that established both Rahul and ECO, which was subsequently sold and Rahul fell in half. And in this instance, you see entrenched dominant affairs. That can continue to extract monopoly rights from local customers who are usually downstream manufacturers and labor intensive. So this is a very direct effect on jobs. And the Competition Act does manage that to deal with this. I want to go to those provisions. I think members can reach those for the first. Let me now come to this subtle case. And again, I don't want to take much of the time because Simon was an expert of the Commission, and I think it led to the reason and a lot of the essential issues that are important for this discussion. I think it's important to highlight that Sabo is a very low cost producer. In fact, it's one of the lowest cost producers in the world. It says that the existing food costs are 25 to 30% lower than a typical European producer. Producers large volume both local and export market. And this is possible because of the abundant feedstock that's emanating from the fuel manufacturing that's taking place in the beneficiation of coal into liquid fuel. And we've seen that the charge that comes best in 1995 that actually until just 2000, you
this problem responding there to the change that we're seeing in place in the country and charge local customers almost the same price that they were charging in export from export. And you see the graph that was showing the growth that is larger for that. But what's important is that nothing committed to see those prices, and it seems that just out of the blue after 2000, they changed their pricing model into import pricing, and it seems the catastrophic result that emanated from that. Now, the response from the policy makers in large part was leaked to the competition authority to address, and indeed it is a case that now is finalized. But I think it's very important to note that there is effort that has been done, except for the competition authority investigation and prosecution of the case, which has taken 7 years to have the case finalized. And I would say that that points to the limitation of what competition policy can achieve in a lot is said about the excessive import parity price, but we look at it from the point of view, as I said, of excessive pricing. And excessive pricing is a price charged by the minister which has no real relation to economic value of the food or service. And it's higher than its value to the detriment of consumers. And we would assess this relative to the price that, or in comparison to the price that would prevail under normal, a normal competitive market. Consumers, in the case of the Sarko case, were plastic competitors. And the tribunal in returning to judgment emphasized the need for opportunity for innovation and development for domestic manufacturers in the downstream plastic pool as a result of structural conduct. It involves a fine of $5.4 million, and order structural price such that the location of the fine would not influence the price. Again, this is not saying that we must favor domestic producers. It says that our producers have at least a right to charge if they would be treated the same as via everywhere, including the price we were the most of the court tenants go. This is the case that currently on appeal, and we also cross appeal to say the price must be increased. I will mention that part of the problem with competition policy as a tool is that it will are very slow. It drives very slow, it has taken us 7 years to complete the case. It's now on appeal. It can go anything for another 2 to 3 years. So it will easily take about 10 years to have this problem resolved. Of course, I've got to do so. And I think that I must also mention that what we are trying to do is effectively addressing a regulation on industrial policy loophole in the sense that there are many other possible remedies that the state could have considered. One of them is proposed in item 3, which is to regulate. Indeed, the state already regulates the fuel price, and fuel, in our case, is largely, in fact, a product of the negotiation activity by travel. So it's possible to be a case that, especially in the all parties, such as we have observed and confessed by the tribunal. And of course, there is this issue of money management. It's important to say that there is nothing that stops the state or the DMR from imposing conditions in life, particularly in human life, regarding the education. This will remain part of the legislation that proposed in the education. It makes it very clear that the state has the custodian of mineral rights. They have all the power to impose conditions, absolutely include conditions around the education. And we've looked at the standard mining conditions. In fact, the standard floor, the floor in on most of the mining licenses that change the title of mineral and their liberty should be sold at competitive market prices on that mineral cash. So it would seem to us, to some extent, this is an issue of lack of enforcement, sometimes lack of oversight and tightening of mining conditions. If I now conclude on this plastic initiation case, I think that it's important to emphasize that there are many other policy interventions that could be made. And what seems to be lacking is proper coordination within the state around those conditions, interventions. There is obviously a complexity in coordination because a part of this would include things like export taxes which would require national treasury. A part of this would include the initiation initiative which would include the GDI as well as DMR. So coordination is a big thing. In fact, a lot of things that you observe here, we're not hearing it for the first time. I think it's really an issue of the capacity of the state to be able to coordinate the intervention is really important. I have not touched on a number of cases that we've dealt with in many of the sectors that have been mentioned, but that are three parts of the initiation. Part of the limitation is that obviously this is an open colonial for a lot of our clients. We are currently in the agreement to attend the session. But just to give you an idea of the breadth of issues we have had. We have extensive private cases around this, which are very similar to the issues that are around plastic. Basically, where local customers are discriminated against vis-a-vis export customers. We've also seen that that is reinforced by cartels, the price in the case that price is quite could be other lower competitors they will be drawn into an argument so that those prices are maintained. We have looked at the specialized cases, as Professor Jordan mentioned, that it constitutes about 30% of input into agriculture. We looked at the agricultural specialized and those cases have been completed. We've looked at things like fuel, the diesel case we now are dealing with, which is the case of a cartel among major oil companies. And again, there's a lot of this is based on a lot of mineral products that we produce as a country. So let me conclude then by saying that we identified that particularly bring this type of thing that I think the forecast is going to be required within the economic cluster. And we think our role is really going to be bringing a lot of this information to the attention of various public departments and advocating for particular interventions beyond competition policy. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you, Commissioner Monteiro, and also Mr. Chris from your hearing as Commissioner, and the weekly reflection. Thank you very much. And if you're going to do, I'm sure you can study it. But he's off the SAEDA task here, and hopefully it will go well. I'm sure we all have the handout there. So we just have a quick movement. The members do not be sure now, knowing that we started late with technical glitches. We are running 20 minutes on our late, which will have put us into 2 o'clock. So I hope there is a clear understanding that we are finishing at 2. There has been tea outside for people who would like to have some, but we are going to have tea break at after 12 o'clock for 10 minutes. So please immediately move over and welcome. I think we've got two of our members, two of the members here from the South African Mining Development Association, the Bridget Abeli, the President, and the Neil Bakshi as well. So those making the actual presentation, right, Mr. Abeli, right, can we immediately start on that? And everyone does have the while the last presentation was going on, the EG from Bob Scott from DCI had to leave and will be rejoined after he just got through his meeting on the other side of the room, perhaps with the minister. So the EG is just
Just a little bit about the art for a few minutes, because many people out there remember the chamber. We had to create our command organization in the early 2000s because when the state wanted to become the custodian of mineral rights, so they decided to mineral rights to then invested in the hands of 4 companies. And the state wanted to correct that so that the state can become the custodian and everybody was happy. Now, the arguments that came back over the monopoly was very traditional. We didn't want the state to become the custodian and the business of that. So it was very important for a new voice to be created. And they had to be the voice as well. And this is really focusing on transformation. The board reminded also that the expression is advised to connect with the communities to be involved, because the next time was probably like reporting to a free people that have been in the industry, you said have been in the industry for 10 years as a producer of minerals. I was a first black sister, irrespective of men and women, first black sister, had learned to go out of our, had learned to be sharp teaching, then consulting, actually making anything, because it's from there and I'll create the mind. And from the mind, a little thing gets created. And next to me is Bill Bosch, who's a geologist. He used to be head of the Middle Economies at Mintech, and he's a Middle Economist at that. So it's not the language that we read, it's also the language we live, and the composition of the mining industry that we are part of. So some of us created, and then from the energy project sector, they have done the research. And in the research of the industry, to look at what kind of industries are we now embracing, they came up with 4 categories. There were companies that had an asset base of 7 billion and above, and they were the major. And the companies with an asset base of 6 billion, 7 billion, is the junior mining sector. Hence the creation of the South African Mining Development Association. Below 50 million is small scale mining, below the small scale mining are the last small mines. Now, with that in mind, you will then read this. I won't go through the mission and vision of SAMHSA, but I just put it for very limited time. You can read it. But we have to have an industry that was in the military, and if you look at this, the kind of custom industry that had no recognition, military labor force, moral payments to rural communities, and rural communities also very limited. Neocolonialism existed in those towns. So it was important for the state to come and pursue the mineral rights. It started out contributed very heavily towards that custodianship of mineral rights that in the hands of the state. And we wanted to move from economy and the mining environment, the mining industry, that's from exploited mining environment on the left to sustainable mining environment on the right. Because the traditional mining methods is to explore, express, exploit, export, and create your goals are heading to the goal of third country. Now, 2014, in 20 years of our democracy, more than 10 years of the party, one of the things we have is this. The economic emancipation of the majority of the people has been reached. But the one thing also is that the political emancipation has been reached. But the economic apartheid continues to prevail. Now we can all take ownership of the fact that they have to change. And that is why the creation of the Minerals and Resources Development Act to make sure that we change the mining laws from the old mining laws to the new mining laws, to make sure that we get a new society. This country that we have for all together, forced to create, we then have to make sure that the economic and the majority of the people is vested in the hands of the majority of the people everywhere in Africa before we can think of our own investment. Nothing wrong with foreigners, nothing wrong with investing in this country, provided they are here for the minimum and proposed resource to build it, and more than ever, provided they are here to the child. If they don't, then I will work. And we can't be too, you know, really complimentary about countries that are not coming here and practicing the rules and the should be practiced through the rules. And we can also be not, we can't be complimentary about government officials that are too insecure and they want to do what I want. We have a lot of things to look at. We have a lot of labor unrest. We've got a lot of different section people in the rural communities and we need it. And so on about it. Just where the mining community is heading to the free, where the bulk of minerals are being produced in this country, Marikan. I come 10 kilometers from that area. My home is just Nagal, it's 10 kilometers from Marikan. And the Malora country, they could start. There'd be lots of different crews, homes in those areas. Nepal, Burma, why? And this is why we are going to change too. Now, to this time up, you look at this. This is what's happening today. Despite the fact that we have laws that are saying that they have to be sustainability and they have to be economic emancipation and political emancipation for the majority of the people. This is a reflection of what we are doing, so great today. And we need to correct that. It's your job and my job collectively and every person's job to raise and be aware of the difficulties and consequences. Now, the world-based social community and empowerment charter was created. And in that charter, you find that there was a differentiation. So the charter, one of the elements of the charter talks about beneficiation. But if you look at here, beneficiation means the transition to mineral or the combination of high-level products and even consume low-tech courses, the core beneficiation is often used to facilitate you with low value emission. I'm not going to go through all this because it's very small and not a speaker, but why it's important is section 26 of the FDRPA. Okay? Section 26 of the FDRPA says, the companies have to beneficiate. Yeah, the military initiatives are to try to take to promote the initiation of minerals in the Republic. So if the intention is to restrict the minerals and to go to petroleum development, if the military acting on advice of the board and ask for consulting the minerals trade and industry to find that the particular mineral can be beneficiated because of the Republic, the minister may promote that beneficiation subject to terms and conditions as the minister may determine. But furthermore, it says, any person who intends to beneficiate any mineral mined in the Republic outside of the Republic may only do so after this notice and in consultation with the minister. Now, how many of those people that are beneficiating outside the country have ever listened to the minister to ask permission to do that if the mineral is a South African old mineral? This is one thing that we need to look into. Because if we start from that, maybe we can then encourage the meditation and the produce of the enterprise to be more than here in our shore. But do we have a label of that? I haven't heard of it. That would like us collectively to try and listen to it. And I repeat, any person who intends to beneficiate any mineral mined in the Republic outside the Republic may only do so after written notice and in consultation with the minister. That's a very important issue to look into. And then we also talk about the board in section 26.2. If a minister is in advance of the board, section 27 of the Act talks about board. If you look at the mining Act, MWA, section 57, section 50, I think 58 is about the board. The board is composed of all the major stakeholders. At one stage, I used to be the deputy chair of the board. At that time, I did a little cleaner chair of the board. And in that board, you have a president of now, the president of Solidarity, Congress traditional leaders, with the community stuff, women in mining, youth in mining, BTR is on their board, and but unfortunately, when the previous 5 years, the board has not been very active. So we need to resuscitate that board, because that board has all the stakeholders sitting together, collectively the DTI and the board, so the DTI is a key member. Now, furthermore, if you look at Section 100 of the Act, Section 102A says very clearly, and this is Section 100, there has to be a charter. Now, if you look at Section 102A, the charter, it talks about the mineral and petroleum development act. The mining council is based on the historic charter for the transformation of the mining sector. That is to reduce elements of sustainable growth of the mining industry with intent to ensure transformation of the mining industry. Now they have to start all about ownership, the procurement and negotiation. But the critical thing about the negotiation is that how are you going to beneficiate if your mines are all on owned? If the bulk of the minerals are vested in the hand, maybe, of 49 of the companies. And I'm saying, wow, maybe. Now, more than 49 of the companies in South Africa, but if you look at the 49 of the companies, the world is much faster than 4 trillion. I'll go further than that. But before I go there, in terms of ownership profile, you look at these also other elements of the charter. So the charter has elements that are geared towards transformation, of which beneficiation is one of them. But I'll go there also and take the ownership and the registration as one, and you see where we come from. If you look at ownership profile, as I indicated, each and every mine is supposed to have had today, the 1st of May 2014, charter, not less than 26%. Historically, it's disadvantaged South Africans in the hands of the historical disadvantaged South Africans. And a lot of those are agreed ownership schemes, community cuts, cooperative cuts, being technical producers, women in mind, youth in mind, people living with disabilities. Many of these consortiums consist as world-based black economic and carbon companies that are partners in those mines. And if you look at those world-based partners, the market cap is 2.574 trillion of the mine, not the world bank, of the mine. So the market cap of the 49 of the companies is 2.574 trillion. If each and every of those mines had 26%, historically this is like South African as partners, you would have looked today and looked at the market cap in the hands of black people, historically this is South African, of 359 billion. But that is not so. We only have two governments at that. What we have, instead of 359 billion, we only have 3.8 billion. Which is 2.574 vested in the hand. So the ownership is so vested offshore. And by virtue of the ownership being vested offshore, you find that there's a lot of transfer pricing. A lot of transfer pricing has been explained to you, but I want to link up with those listed companies or those unlisted companies that are offshore, that have a market, that have companies that are both here. They sell, they produce the minerals, they sell that minerals to themselves. So the marketing company that is registered in the tax haven, and that marketing company is their marketing company, and they sell it at a very cheap rate. But the time that mineral is sold on in the offshore market, they will then get a higher price. So let's just see hypothetical figures. They have $5 to themselves, and they earn $500. And that $500 is reflecting on their sheet. If the 500 grand doesn't reflect in our balance sheet, it means that there's a negative balance sheet. Now, the workers are earning 1,500 is saying they can't pay enough, but they have not employed any transfer pricing. The taxman wants more tax, but they say they're going to have money, but it's not in capital gains that where money has gone to through transfer pricing. They should have been declared in South Africa so the taxman can have their tax, do the legal process to make sure that things happen when the vulnerable members of communities need those things to happen. So it's a vicious circle of everything. And when you look at direct and indirect contributions of the mining industry, you find that the mining industry contributes just a little bit, just a few indirect contributions. 70% GDP, 38% of merchandise exports, where primary and beneficiated mineral exports is part of that 78%. 90% of private sector investment and 50% of transnet rail ports and 94% of electricity generation, 20% of electricity demand, 37% of the country's cooked food, and the plant or shore, you can indirectly affect all the other industries. Now, if you have the ownership profile, and that is why you have a lot of Chinese companies, not 90% of share, because they say to you that they are producers of minerals. They do not have solar fertilization. Yes, they are. But they get in the task of saying, before you can buy silver or buy converted vegan cans, and that's just what I'm looking at, you have to make sure that you are compliant. You've got to make sure that you're in procurement. You've got to make sure that you're anti-share. You've got to make sure that there must be not less than 6% of ownership in the ADNA. You've got to make sure that there must be prime equity. You must go on development. And there must be rules. You've got all those charts, the elements of the charts. But there's the application. And you say, yes, I will do that. And you get that certificate conversion. But when you trade, you don't actually do it. And by not doing that, you have to take off. And now, further, what we are saying, a lot of those companies also, the bulk of the strategic minerals that government has declared as strategic minerals, government has declared 11 minerals as strategic, and we as some are saying, as party to the negotiation, we must look at what the strategic minerals are and see those 11. And in terms of those 11, we need to negotiate in line with the government policy of strategic minerals. But we did not announce that there were four other minerals that government has included as strategic. You can't have a country without food security. And what type of one that you need fertilizer? Because you need food security for those phosphates if you fertilize them for the farmers. Fertilizer, they grow whatever they need to grow. And then also life from the cement. And then the other commodities, shell gas, oil, petroleum. We are now saying to the government, please include the oil strategy so that we can move beyond. This is just a map of where the strategic models are. We can later. This is a map where all the other strategic models are. We can have a look. We don't have enough time. But if you look beyond the presentation and we see there are also commodities that are very changed. So government is, you know, declared 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as value chains, and these are the value chains. If you look at value chains in terms of iron ore, you need to talk about native crude, these are the kinds of products that you can value chain. And if you look further in terms of energy, uranium, coal, and thorium, these are kind of things, not just export coal, but there's also through uranium and thorium, you can create energy. And if you look further, and you look at maybe the diamond and platinum, you know, you have all these other resources you can visit. So the kind of, you can get more seeing pictures for your interest. Fertilizer, cement I've spoken about. And then fuel cell, which is a very unique way of creating energy for cars. Normally, traditionally, what we normally do, we produce our car platinum, we export the wood, and then platinum is used in the catalytic conversion from cars for the energy. But we are saying that carbon emission sensitive, but with fuel cell, you are more carbon emission positive. Because you find that you use very, very, if no at all, give no CO carbon emission, and you find that you fuel cell is an electrochemical design, produced electricity, balance to the fast combustion. So the oxygen part of one electrode, hydrogen of the other, generating electricity or energy. And through fuel cell application, you can have a lot of own products beneficiated. Now, our argument is, there are also barriers for negotiation in terms of when to do that. And in the barrier of negotiation, there's time for time that I talked about. There's no point in saying that the bulk of the commodities are offshore owned. The bulk of the companies that I started to get are all offshore. They're not going to negotiate because they make a lot of money through transfer pricing. They make a lot of money by exporting their mineral, cheaping, producing the percent profit in our balance sheet and making sure that they export it to themselves, and then by selling it on after they export it to themselves, they get a higher income. So if you have a share, that commodity will then be less, and you find the income that you make offshore that you don't represent, not reflect in South Africa, you can always get. And that is why the desire to advertise is very limited. And we are saying you need to introduce laws that will actually that kind of thing doesn't happen. In what kind of time, what has been spoken about? Skilled infrastructure, funding, access to raw materials and competitive platforms. Access to the raw material, we need to make sure that the access to raw materials are also given to South African companies first. You know, because finally we have an artificial price, you know, raw material access through import tariff pricing. We actually the commodity that you produce in South Africa and very short life that she's going to have. And, you know, those kind of things happen to people. Now, you know, we are taking advantage of one by one, and merely throwing in, you know, the question and answer can deal with it. But sometimes we talk about in my having that we need to eliminate IDP patterns, the pride, and then also if you go further, the field, the local field development at large rate at current. We have a problem with all these offshore companies that are also listed. They have now a limited field offshore. There's even this problem, the problem that we have, that some companies don't want to open offshore offices in Dubai because, you know, it's cheaper or whatever they think, and the field can't be produced here in South Africa. And the money, you know, procurement of investigation is very important. And we need a certain time to increase investment in manufacturing sector. The IDPs must make sure that they and the PIGs, when they go and the banks are there, when they do invest, they must invest in mining companies that have a unique beneficiation and procurement portfolio. They need to look at their products the same way that we are. You know, before mining companies, before we do procurement, we are ready to do EE profile. We look at the target of pricing. We need to apply simulation as that kind of principle. Where even the best is 45, need to find those clients that are in an exercise to obey the law. Because if not, they're not doing anyone in charge of the law thing. Section 100 of the Act and the charge for mining is very easy to manage. So it's the law they have to do. And then access to raw materials, as we said, you may be imported from the local use of this address before export of unprocessed material is allowed. The local use must be addressed, but as considered, even though an offer in competitive platform must give the majority of incentives to the African company before giving incentives to competing for the own company. What incentives are we talking about? I'll just show you the incentives. If you look first, these are incentives. If you look at the incentives, I'll show you here. That tends to the government has created and incentives are here. Okay? I'll come back and talk about these incentives and show you how you can apply for incentives that in some sort of areas where you want to create areas that turn into beneficiation centers. Okay. Now further than that, procurement. You cannot afford to work on beneficiation. In fact, we just want to make an example of if you produce the minerals in South Africa, and you find that you can create the enterprise in South Africa, you are able to have more than what you demonstrate here. We made a little research with the Southern Professional Procurement Forum at that time, 2002. And the research was for 39 hours. And with this research, we can procure when we had 56 provincial governments. And these 69 hours, now there are more than 33 mining hours in South Africa. We just did a research. And the 59 months that we want to supply, we supply the 2,500 narrow-grade historical disadvantaged biodiesel, of which the budget was 6 million, or the total budget for everybody. But the budget for the ADHA was 600 million, which is a lot of money for students. And a lot of money that anyone can be created in responsible mining areas to procure. Now, why procure goods and services that I can focus on for sure? And then this kind of money goes to offshore companies, where this kind of money could be beneficiated in South Africa, procured in South Africa. And if you look at 2008 revenue, it increased from the 39,000 to 56,000. And the 56,000 increased from 41,000 suppliers to 65,000 suppliers. And the week before, the ATMA was 4,500. And the budget increased to 8.5 billion. But the ATMA budget increased from 600 million to 950 million. So surely this is a starting case that can show you that there's a lot happening in South Africa. And there's a lot to be achieved through beneficiation. If the enterprise is produced in the country, everything is done here, and we stop importing the minerals, commodities from China or anywhere that we want to export. When we have the commodities here, when we have the minerals here, and we have the people to produce, we need to do that. We need to charge compliance. We have to adhere to the Section 26 of the SRDA. We have to adhere to Section 100 of the H. Now, first of all, this is the Northern Cape. And the Northern Cape just shows you, a little scenario of 11.98 billion. A small green economy, but a lot of money is generated through procurement. Now, further,
Because, you know, the ones that are being undermined, we
Muslims to create for that for your excitement. And our other groups and relations with either of those people that are more beneficial for the transformation of this country. And I thank you.
I'd like to thank you as well. I'm sorry that people have felt unfresh as presenters, but we have got a broad overview now, and of the team, we will be addressing this and engaging in broader conversation and discussion. So I hope all of the entities and stakeholders that have made and for Seattle remain and be ready to engage with us constructively. And I appreciate the fact that you, in your concerns, identification of the challenges and the impediments, that all of you, in fact, have come through with certain proposals. And that's what we have to unpack and consider. And really, I don't want to preempt what members will be saying or asking just now, but just educating members is not just got the five parts. Can you please try and get back at 4:12:20 past the latest? We are going on to 1400, given that we started late. Thank you very much.
Thank you.